This podcast is for investment professionals only. The value of investments and the income from them may go down as well as up, and investors may not get back the amounts originally invested. Past performance is not a guide to future performance. The information is not an offer, solicitation, or recommendation of any funds, services, or products, or to adopt any investment strategy.
Welcome to the Investor Download, the podcast about the themes driving markets and the economy now and in the future. I'm your host, David Brett. And on today's show,
there's been a huge shift in momentum in stocks favoured by investors over the last 8 months. Untrendy value stocks have suddenly become more fashionable. We look at the factors driving that momentum shift.
Fundamental valuations have got really, really quite extreme towards the end of last year. And regardless of what the individual catalyst is, when valuations that get that extreme, it tends to be unsustainable.
The doubts persisting over its longevity.
But, you know, despite this huge recovery, we are hearing, you know, some concerns from investors that, you know, despite this big move, it's still likely to be short-lived.
And the opportunity it could still present.
If you put 10 grand into value and 10 grand into growth in 1926, today the growth would be worth about 80 million. The value would be worth 780 million.
Investors have become flustered and markets have begun to wobble.
The FTSE 100, it was yanked back from its recent 14-month highs as markets worldwide start to worry about inflation.
As economies begin to reopen after a year of lockdown, investors are trying to second-guess how much demand will cause prices to increase.
Welcome back to Squawk Box. We have breaking news, our April read on Consumer Price Index. And believe me, if you're standing, I recommend you sit down. Up 0.8% on...
And how that will affect the recovery. It's causing something peculiar to occur in stock markets.
There is a great disturbance in the force.
I have felt it.
A phenomenon we've not experienced for some time.
Recently, there's been a huge turn of fortunes for the value style of investing.
That's Sean Markowitz, a strategist at Schroders. A value stock is one that's cheap in relation to basic measures of corporate performance, such as earnings and sales. It's basically cheap, but as far as investors can tell, not for any good reason. Growth stocks, on the other hand, are companies that increase their revenue and earnings at a faster rate than the average business. Since Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine announcement, US value stocks have beaten their growth counterparts by around 12%. That's according to the MSCI Value Less Growth Index.
The one thing that has not changed throughout all of history of investment is human beings and greed and fear. And that's the thing that remains, and that's the thing that appears to drive markets, drive bubbles, and drive periodic value underperformance. But what it allows is fantastic long-term value performance for people that are consistently willing to buy the shares that are out of favour.
That's Simon Adler, a fund manager at Schroders. But doubts have already started to surface over whether it can last.
We've heard our fair share of this time is different arguments over the last few years, whether it's ultra low interest rates, technological disruption. Some people point to accounting standards that people believe are broken or valuation ratios that are no longer relevant. There are a lot of people who've convinced themselves for those reasons that value investing has gone the way of the dodo.
That's Liam Nunn, also a fund manager at Schroders. Liam, Simon and Sean join the pod as we try to unpick what's been happening in markets. We'll be looking into what's driven the rotation into value and whether it's a short-term fad or a long-term trend. But in part one, we'll look at what's happened since the announcement of the vaccines and how we got to where we are.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, you're listening to the Investor Download.
So, the so-called value stocks have rallied strongly at the start of 2021, catching some investors on the back foot.
This has come to the surprise of many investors amid a very long-term trend of underperformance since the global financial crisis.
That's Sean Markowitz. Value has indeed underperformed so-called growth stocks dramatically since the 2008 crisis.
But The collapse of Lehman Brothers set off a wave of panic on Wall Street. With the U.S. economy already reeling, the government denied the 158-year-old bank the emergency funding, the liquidity it needed to survive.
Growth has outperformed value by around 5% per year in the 13 years since the collapse of the Lehman Brothers, which marked the beginning of the global financial downturn. That doesn't sound much, but if you'd invested £1,000 in 2008 in value shares, your investment could be worth roughly $3,500 now. Had you invested it in growth stocks, it would have been worth nearly $6,000. So what happened?
Many investors have blamed falling bond yields, low inflation, and the scarcity of economic growth. But recently, all of those factors have started to turn the other way, and many investors believe that this is what's driving the rotation. Global value stocks, if you measure it through the MSCI All Country World Index, it's beaten its growth counterpart by around 17%. From that point in time, that was one of the biggest rebounds we've seen in a while as of the end of April. And in March, global value stocks beat their growth counterparts by around 5%. And that was the best monthly relative return since 2001. So since the dot-com bubble. And these are some of the market moves that are reinforcing the narrative that it's higher interest rates and growth expectations that are driving that rotation from growth to value, as the huge comeback in value has come alongside this rise in bond yields and rise in economic optimism.
History shows that bad times are followed by good times, and it is the 2020s, so it could be a roaring 20s again, like the 1920s.
The roaring 20s refers to the economic boom experienced following the First World War. And many economists and investors think we might see something similar in 2021 and perhaps beyond. There are expectations that pent-up consumer demand will be unleashed as soon as economies reopen, hopefully as the pandemic eases.
Belfast this morning, the sun was shining and there was a sense of a city coming back to life. Shops, cafes, buskers, street cleaners, and there were queues, big queues.
Nothing, of course, is guaranteed, but we are already seeing some evidence, albeit in the short term, that prices are rising.
Welcome back to Squawk Box. We have breaking news, our April read on Consumer Price Index. And believe me, if you're standing, I recommend you sit down. Up 0.8% on headline, 4x expectations. Strip out the all-important food and energy, up 3x expectations, up 0.9%. Year over year, up 4.2%.
American consumer prices rose at the fastest rate in more than a decade in April, reinforcing fears over rapidly rising inflation that has rattled global markets. And if the rise in inflation continues, interest rates, which are a tool central banks use to control inflation, could follow. And that's what Sean is referencing when he spoke about bond yields. Yields rise when investors think a rise in interest rates to combat inflation is a possibility. And inflation erodes the value of future earnings. In other words, a dollar today doesn't buy as much stuff as a dollar did 30 years ago because of inflation. Given inflation, you would rather have a dollar right now rather than a dollar 10 years in the future. Which brings us back to value versus growth. Growth stocks, the likes of tech companies, have been much sought after because of expectations of their potential future earnings. People have been willing to take a risk and bet that these companies will deliver. However, if interest rates rise, suddenly those bets look a lot more risky. Firstly, safer assets such as bonds look more attractive for their yield. And secondly, rising interest rates erodes the value of the potential earnings from growth companies. And that's what people think is contributing to the rotation out of growth and into cheaper value stocks.
It's always difficult to point to the exact catalyst for why market changes happen.
That's Liam Nunn.
But the main one that jumps out is the vaccine announcements at the beginning of November, what people are calling Vaccine Monday, when Pfizer came out and announced the first successful COVID vaccine.
Pfizer announcing that early data from its human vaccine trial has shown it to be more than 90% effective. Dow futures soaring to record territory, up more than 1,500 right now ahead of the market open on that news.
That led to a fairly dramatic change in market leadership, with a lot of areas of the market that were sold off very, very dramatically, particularly at the beginning of 2020 when the pandemic first emerged, rallying back and making back some of the underperformance that we'd seen through 2020.
Liam's referring to the likes of retail, hospitality and leisure sectors that got particularly bashed during the early stages of the pandemic, not to mention the banks and energy stocks, among others.
Fundamental valuations had got really, really quite extreme towards the end of last year. And regardless of what the individual catalyst is, when valuations that get that extreme, it tends to be unsustainable.
The US stock market in particular, driven by those high growth tech stocks, look particularly expensive on many metrics. In fact, in an interview with the Financial Times, the veteran value investor John Rogers predicted the US is headed for a repeat of the Roaring Twenties a century ago that will finally encourage investors to dump tech stocks in favour of companies more sensitive to the economy. The counter-argument, however, is that unlike the dot-com bubble back in the early 2000s, when investors bought anything with a dot-com in its name, the tech companies in the current era are underpinned by solid business models and growth plans that are almost future-proofed. So why should investors back any other horse?
Yeah, so, I mean, whenever we start drawing parallels with the dot-com bubble, I think, you know, you inevitably do get some pushback. And the argument we've heard on many occasions is that this time is quite different from the tech bubble, because this time a lot of the companies that have attracted really high valuations are seen to be genuinely exceptional businesses that are changing the world around us, primarily the big tech giants at the top of market indices. And many people argue that they are genuine revolutionary businesses that deserve high multiples, unlike the tech bubble when, you know, people were buying crazy, immature IPOs based on kind of eyeballs and clicks. But we think that there's a couple of points we'd make in response to that this time it's different argument. Firstly is that that was actually the case for most of the big tech companies at the top of the market index in 2000. If you look at the largest tech companies in the US index back then, they weren't insane, immature concept businesses. The four top largest tech companies in the index at the height of the boom were Microsoft, Intel, IBM, Cisco. These were genuinely high quality businesses that did go on to deliver exceptional growth. They changed the world and they grew like billio for many years, but they also proved to be bad investments if you bought them at the wrong price. And just because tech giants today are seen as big and innovative and growing fast doesn't necessarily mean that you can't lose money investing them at the wrong price. So we'd be wary of believing the current crop of tech winners are exceptionally brilliant and that you can keep buying them at any price. But the second thing to bear in mind is, and perhaps this is even more important, is that even if you disagree with that first argument I've just made and you feel that you can't compare a Google or an Apple to an Intel or a Cisco from the year 2000, that doesn't necessarily rationalize or explain away the broader market trends we've witnessed over the last 10 years with growth consistently outperforming. Because even if you exclude the exceptional impact of the big tech winners at the top of market indices, fundamental valuation dispersion, the gap between the most highly rated and least highly rated shares globally, is still near all-time highs, which speaks to the fact that, you know, the trend of the last few years isn't something that can be explained away as just rational behavior in the face of the emergence of a handful of really valuable businesses. It looks to us far more like basically the same thing that's happened periodically throughout history, that the market's abandoned the idea that fundamental valuation is important. And that's very much in the spirit of what happened back in 1999-2000. And we think we're looking at an eerily similar market backdrop today.
And what happened after the dot-com bubble burst?
Yeah, MSCI World Index was down 45% 3 years later.
That's Simon Adler.
So people had lost almost half of their money in the World Global Index 3 years after the dot-com boom bust. And of course, many investors had far more in technology than the market, so they lost more than that. Interestingly, over the same time period, 3 years, value was up 27.5%. So it made people money at a period where the overall market had lost people approaching half of their capital. So, you know, that is an interesting element. Clearly, the same thing doesn't ever happen twice. Lightning doesn't strike twice. Things are different. But it's stark that during a period where the overall market was diabolical, value made people money. And after 5 years, the market was still down over 11.5%, the global MSCI World Index, and value was up over 200%. So a phenomenal performance. Now, yeah, none of us know if that's going to happen again. Clearly, as value investors, that's something that we like the look of. But it's interesting that after a bubble, the market can be very, very poor, but value can still do well.
You have been warned, but the issue remains. What is actually driving the recovery in value stocks, and can it last? That's what we'll be discussing in parts 2 and 3 of the show.
Get in touch with us by email at shorterspodcasts@shorters.com or visit our website shorters.com/investor download.
So let's get stuck into what's really driving the rally in value stocks. Let's start with the interest rate argument. We've already touched on the supposed correlation between rising bond yields and interest rate expectations and the relative performance of value, but it's not perhaps all it seems. Here's Sean.
The problem, I think, is that although value versus the gross returns have been positively correlated with the changes in yields in recent years, the relationship hasn't been consistent over time. So if it really was the case that interest rates are the kind of ultimate driver of value versus gross returns, you'd expect that correlation to be fairly positive consistently over time. So over the past 3 years, for example, the correlation, if you take, for example, the performance of the MSCI USA Value Index versus its growth counterpart and yield changes in 10-year real yields, it's been around 0.55, so 0.55, so fairly strong. And yet over the past 5 decades, the average correlation has been zero. So it's oscillated between being positive and negative. And so if it really was the case, the value's prospects hinged on interest rate movements, then I think you'd expect that correlation to be more consistent. But that's not to say it has no relationship whatsoever. I just think it's a bit more nuanced. So what we've found in our research is that what seems to matter more is the speed at which interest rates movements occur. So performance seems unrelated to, say, a gradual increase in interest rates. It tends to occur in tandem with other economic factors that are moving in the market. But sharp and sudden changes, such as those that we witnessed in February of this year, they tend to have a large impact. And that was the month where we saw a huge rotation to value. So it's during those months that we found on average values outperformed when real yields have risen by, say, 2 standard deviations. So a standard deviation being a measure of how abrupt the change is relative to the average month-to-month move. But when real yields have risen by, say, only 1 or fewer standard deviations, the relative returns have been on average flat. And also, contrary to popular belief, which I think is worth mentioning, value stocks have actually tended to underperform growth stocks where inflation expectations have increased rapidly. There's this growing narrative that we hear in the market that if inflation were to shoot up, that would be good for value. But the truth is that when you look at the data, inflation expectations increases don't seem to be all that fantastic for value. And one possible explanation is actually that although inflation might increase, the yield adjusted for inflation is going to decrease. And as I said, real yield decreases are better for growth than for value. So you see, it's a much more nuanced story, I believe.
So it's not necessarily about inflation expectations or interest rates and bond yields, but the speed of the movement. So if bond yields rise suddenly and move quickly, that appears to be a bigger factor in determining the outperformance of value stocks. But there's another explanation as to why the outperformance of value isn't just about rising bond yields. It's about what constitutes a value stock.
One of the reasons for this inconsistent relationship with bond yields is because value's cyclical exposure relative to growth changes over time. So we're not saying that value is uncorrelated with bond yields, but the constituents of value universes obviously are going to have a change in composition over time. And that is actually what perhaps drives that stronger correlation with bond yields relative to history. So cyclical sectors, they tend to outperform when economic growth strengthens and yields rise, while defensive sectors, they outperform when economic growth slows and yields fall. That is a fairly accepted principle.
So cyclicals are stocks whose fortunes will rise and fall depending on the strength of the economy. They're typically companies like clothing retailers. If the economy is booming and people are feeling wealthy, they're more likely to treat themselves to something extravagant like an expensive coat. Defensive stocks are the opposite. Their fortunes aren't so closely tied to the fortunes of the economy. They're typically businesses like consumer staples, so businesses that produce household cleaning products and healthcare companies. But what's that got to do with value versus growth?
And so according to our research, when you look at the actual cyclical exposure of, say, the MSCI USA Value Index or the Russell Value, any of these broad-based market indices that capture value universes from 2009 to 2016, the longest spell of underperformance. Value stocks were around 10% overweight cyclicals relative to growth. But come 2017 to around 2019, it actually started to become underweight cyclicals and overweight defensives. It was overweight around 15% defensives, which is quite interesting because it coincided perfectly with the huge rotation we saw into value in 2016. And I remember everyone was saying, you know, this is going to be the big moment for value to outperform. But the problem is that at least at the index level, a lot of the constituents had already left the universe that were most exposed to that cyclical upswing that occurred when Trump had signed his tax cuts.
So for business, no business of any size, from a Fortune 500 company to a mom and pop shop, to a freelancer living from gig to gig, will pay more than 15% of their business income in taxes.
And expectations for economic growth were booming, and yet value did not continue to outperform.
So if things weren't hard enough for investors when backing value against growth, they also need to consider whether the value stock they're picking is cyclical or defensive.
In the last few years in particular, there has been a growing tendency to conflate value with pro-cyclicality. And yet we mentioned the experience at the peak of dot-com mania earlier. And if you look back then in 2000, the really attractively undervalued parts of the market were consumer staples stocks, the opposite of pro-cyclical stocks. And back then, they were the big, boring, low-growth businesses in comparison to exciting, high-growth tech stuff. And value investors had a lot of exposure there. So I think that conception that value investing is all about cyclical recovery or it's all about inflation, I think you don't have to look too far back in history to see that value investing is ultimately, it's a contrarian investment philosophy that just focuses on finding the unloved cheapest companies wherever they happen to reside. And yes, today, some of that is in cyclical sectors of the market, be it financials, energy, mining, but that isn't always the case. And it certainly won't be the case forever.
Which doesn't rule out value investments within the tech sector.
The point of value investing is to, you know, find a quality company for the right price. You don't want to overpay. You know, just because you're a value manager doesn't mean you avoid the technology space, for example. So, you know, to put that into the context, if you take, say, the US MSCI Value Index, the second and third largest sectors are healthcare, as was mentioned, and also IT. So just because, you know, you're value doesn't mean you avoid technology. And I think that's an important point to make.
Totally agree. What's remarkable is that of the four biggest companies in the dot-com boom, 10 to 15 years later, they had got cheap enough to be on the value screens, the cheapest companies in the world. So Microsoft, Intel, Cisco and IBM were the four biggest at the peak of the dot-com boom. 10 to 15 years later, they were amongst the cheapest shares in the world. So technology can absolutely be cheap. We've got some interesting cheap technology today, but it's incredible how through an investment career, you see all things at all prices. And technology is a cheap sector today. It's just the low growth stuff that's attractive, not the super duper high growth Facebook, Google's, Apple's of the world, which we believe is somewhat eye-watering.
The message is clear. No sector or style is out of bounds for value investors. You just need to be choosy when investing in them. And it's also clear for people who invest in tracker funds or exchange-traded funds, ETFs as they're known. Look at what's under the hood to understand what constitutes the makeup of your investment. So interest rates and yields, or at least the duration and the speed with which they move, can affect the performance of value. Cyclicality, or where we are in the economic cycle, can have an effect too, depending on the makeup of the value index at the time. But surely these companies have to be making money. Profits matter, surely.
Well, I mean, like any of these economic indicators, nothing is guaranteed. But when we did look at the numbers, I would argue that profits, more so than rates, seems to be an important catalyst for the rotations into value. Was one of the indicators I found to be the most consistent. And that's to say that the strongest performance for value, according to our research, is when you see these periods where profit growth reaches a so-called V-shaped inflection point. So we saw in March of last year a huge fall in profits. And it was only by the summer of last year in August that profits started to finally stop contracting and rebound. And at that point is really when the rotation started to pick up speed. And it's usually those moments where you see these enormous value rotations. So as of that period, in the US at least, values outperform growth by around 12%. And if you look historically since the 1990s, there have been around 10 episodes where you have these inflection points in profit growth. But the average performance has only been about 5%. So there's about 7% more outperformance than would be expected from this pattern. And I do think it's intuitive because when profit growth is scarce, as it has been for most of the past year and also past decade, investors are more willing to pay up for faster growing companies in the form of high price to earnings multiples. But it's when that profit growth is relatively more abundant that investors become more choosy about valuations. And that's what leads growth stocks to derate as cheaper stocks swing back into favor. That's what's happened since the vaccine announcement. We've seen a lot of these big tech names that we've mentioned underperform the broader US market. And it's that moment that really drives, I think, this rotation into value. But, you know, despite this huge recovery, we are hearing, you know, some concerns from investors that, you know, despite this big move, it's still likely to be short-lived because the structural backdrop still remains unsupportive for value and more supportive for growth. But to be honest, it's a quite a divided debate at the moment.
Which is what we'll be discussing in the final part of the show. Is the resurgence in value a short-term fad or a longer-term trend? Growth has underperformed value for quite some time, despite the recent rally. As we explained at the top of the show, value has lagged growth by around 5% per year since the financial crisis.
Before last year, value was going through its worst period in terms of the number of years of underperformance. And before last year, it was already as extreme on a lot of measures as it was at the peak of the dot-com boom, which, of course, is remembered as a parody of ridiculousness for stock markets. Then we had last year, and we had the worst year of performance for value ever. And so, you know, the value versus growth was massively beaten up, you know, blood on the streets at the beginning of last year. And then it was given a huge extra pounding in terms of value versus growth.
That's a long time to continue backing the wrong horse. So with this recent upturn in value, is the worst behind us?
I mean, you can never say never, but the levels of extremity we are at now would make any additional material underperformance and value even more extraordinary. And, you know, as I say, you never know what's around the corner. You never can know what's around the corner. But the more extreme and the more beaten up, the harder it is to have that level of extremity and beating up again.
But given everything we've talked about, does that mean that this rally in value will last? And are there any compelling arguments for it lasting?
I guess what's important is to look at a few different measures as to can it last or why it might last. And the most important is probably that the opportunity remains extraordinarily large. If one looks at value versus growth types of measures, we're still at levels that on many measures are more extreme than the dot-com boom and bust.
If you take, for example, the relative difference between growth and value stocks in terms of their cyclically adjusted historical earnings, so it's the profits adjusted for the business cycle, so adjust for the downturn that we have. Growth stocks relative to value are 33 times more expensive. That compares with only 10 times in 2016. So 5 years ago, they've been three times cheaper, and yet the valuation gap between growth and value has continued to widen. And it's that price differential that, according to our research, is quite an important component of future long-term returns. So you couldn't have made that argument 5 years ago. Growth was actually trading at a reasonable premium to value in line with its historical average. But it's really since 2017 that returns have started to become so disconnected from that fundamental component. The earnings differential between growth and value has always been positive. Growth stocks generate, by virtue of their high growth, higher profits, but it's become so out of sync with their performance. And as that gap between relative returns and earnings widens, the opportunity for value has increased enormously.
A second point is, from our understanding, client portfolios remain very biased to growth and quality. There is quite a serious lack of diversification going on. And we think as people start to realize that and recognize that, there may be increasing flows of money towards value, which could be compounded by the changes of what's going on with ETFs. You know, there's vast amounts of money in ETFs today, and vast amounts of that are in momentum ETFs. Now, suddenly, if momentum's measured on a six-month basis, value is top of the pile, which hasn't been the case for years. And so that's another potential wall of money to value. And, you know, the last thing we'd note is, if you put 10 grand into value and 10 grand into growth in 1926, today the growth would be worth about 80 million. The value would be worth 780 million. And it does that because value has generated phenomenal long-term compounding returns. So with history on our side, the long term is that the long term should be better for value anyway. And when you can do that at a time where the opportunity is as large as it is today, we think there's plenty of reasons for value to be able to keep going.
Well, as you'd expect, I think last year in particular, there were some incredible opportunities in areas that were caught in the eye of the pandemic storm, in cyclical areas, areas exposed to advertising, autos, etc. The market very much reacted with a kind of muscle memory from the global financial crisis and quite indiscriminately sold off a lot of those areas. And we found a lot of opportunities there. More recently, we found opportunities in kind of more diverse sectors, be it healthcare, where the market might be worrying about patent cliffs, or it could be in areas like telecoms, where earnings growth has been hard to find for a long time. But we found a few areas where we think that the outlook's improving. So it really is quite broad, and I think probably broader than people appreciate when they talk about value as a kind of recovery play or a cyclical recovery play. I think we really do think that it's broader than that, and that there are opportunities around in lots of different pockets of the market. I think when people ask about whether there is legs to the kind of value relative to recovery, I think you have to take into account that what we've seen in the last 5-6 months has been almost entirely driven by strong absolute performance of shares that were driven down to extremely low valuations at the peak of the COVID sell-off last year. And what we haven't seen is any real material change at the polar opposite end of the market. You know, the really red hot areas that have seen breakneck multiple expansion in recent years, be it US tech, renewable energy, et cetera. And while we believe, you know, the absolute returns on offer from value should be very attractive from here, it is also worth considering that relative outperformance can be sustained also by the froth coming out of some of those high growth areas of the market, where we think, you know, financial gravity is ultimately likely to bring some of those multiples back down to earth. And we definitely haven't really seen that yet.
No one is saying that there's going to be a huge market crash in growth stocks, or that their profits, you know, will fail to materialize. You know, on average, these companies do generate faster profit growth because they're growing at a faster pace. They're younger companies usually. But the point here, I think, is that most of that future growth is already priced in. If it's already priced in, then by definition, the companies are not going to be able to sustain their performance because it's already all in the price. And so by derating that, that convergence occurs, and that's where why you might see values to start to outperform.
Every single time, value has come roaring back and defied the doubters. And we've heard our fair share of this time it's different arguments over the last few years, whether it's ultra low interest rates, technological disruption. Some people point to accounting standards that people believe are broken, or valuation ratios that are no longer relevant. There are a lot of people who've convinced themselves for those reasons that value investing has gone the way of the dodo, but we don't think that's the case.
One thing that has not changed throughout all of history of investment is human beings and greed and fear. And that's the thing that remains. And that's the thing that appears to drive markets, drive bubbles, and drive periodic value underperformance. But what it allows is fantastic long-term value performance for people that are consistently willing to buy the shares that are out of favour, and the performance from that has been superb over the long term.
Here's what else investors are talking about. At the end of March, the S&P 500 index of US large companies was valued at 34 times its earnings over the past 12 months. This is more expensive than at the peak of the dot-com bubble at the end of 1999. And it's a long way above the five-decade average. Popular measures of stock market valuations scream that the US stock market is eye-wateringly expensive and that you should run a mile. But does that mean you should? You can read Duncan Lamont's article, Why You Shouldn't Try to Time the Top of the Market, at schroders.com/insights, where you can find and read much, much more. Well, that was the show. We very much hope you enjoyed it. If you want to get in touch with us about anything on the show or give us ideas for future shows, you can email us at schroderspodcast@schroders.com. If you want to listen to the Investor Downloads back catalogue, and why wouldn't you? You can go to schroders.com/the Investor Download or rate, review and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. New shows are available every Thursday and every other Monday from 5 p.m. UK time. But above all, keep safe and go well. Cheers.